And we are on air for Fanfa Racing's NASCAR Weekend Preview. And tonight we're previewing both New Hampshire Motor Speedway and Berlin Raceway. So joining me for tonight's show is our co-host, Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. I actually feel like I was sitting down ready to go 5 minutes ago, so relax tonight.
Good deal. All right, so here's the overview for tonight. First, we're going to give a few updates from the ARCA East and the ARCA West series. They're not racing this weekend, but we'll make sure you know when their next races will be. And then we'll do the ARCA Menards series at Berlin Raceway preview. Now, this is a double event because it's one race, but two championships that these guys are going to be racing for, and that's for the ARCA Menards Series point standings as well as for the Sioux Chief Showdown. So we'll have a lot to talk about there. And at the top of the hour, 9 p.m. Eastern, we will get into the NASCAR Truck Series updates as well. They are not racing again this week, and in fact, they don't race again until next month. So we'll give you all the updates there on the NASCAR Truck Series. Their next race, by the way, is their season finale. So they will determine who will be moving on to their playoffs and during that August 7th race. At about 9:20, we'll start our NASCAR Xfinity Series preview at New Hampshire. And at 9:40, our preview will cover the NASCAR Cup Series at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. 10 o'clock is our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off with our Fanfa Racing crew, and Tommy will be joining both Jay and I as we discuss the hottest topics from this week and before the weekend of racing. So with that, Jay, let's go ahead and get into our updates here from the ARCA Menards Series. Let's start with the ARCA East. Their next race is July the 24th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time at Iowa Speedway. They'll be racing the Shore Lunch 150, and it will be televised on NAB TV. So give us a rundown on the points, Jay.
All right, and that was on the East, correct? Whoops.
Yes, on the ARCA East.
All right, I think I had the Sioux Chief Showdown. Let me back up one. You mentioned there, though, it's great to see, we've talked about this, Iowa Speedway, that they are still hosting some races and staying relevant in NASCAR, and I think that's
yes.
A great, great thing.
Definitely.
All right, on the East, they got five races in. Three of those races have been won by Sammy Smith, all five in the top five. So he's got a 30-point lead over Mason Diaz, Joey East, Max Gutierrez, and Daniel Dye. That next group there, second through fourth, or fifth, minus 30, minus 34, minus 37, minus 43. They're in a tight group there, but Sammy Smith, again, picking up three out of the five victories, all five in the top five, the only driver to have done so. Got that fairly tremendous lead there. Ty Gibbs, the other one, picking up a win. Running down those 6th through 10th real quick before we move on to the West, Parker Retzlaff, Rajah Caruth, Dick Delhaney, Stephanie Moyer, and Carson Kvaapel. And it's the top six. Rajah Caruth, the last one that has made all five starts. Dick Delhaney only has four starts. So the gap there, seven, all five starts made is minus 47. So second through seventh, really within striking distance in any one race. Going to take more than one or two races, though, I think, to catch Sammy Smith.
Yes, indeed. So these guys are still in their season, but the next race won't be until the 24th of July, which is, I believe, next weekend. So let's go ahead and move on to the ARCA Menards Series West. For some reason, I went to a completely different place here. The ARCA Menards Series West is actually going to race on July the 31st. Now, that race is going to be at 8:30 p.m. Mountain Time. I believe that's going to be 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time at Colorado National Speedway, the Napa Auto Parts Colorado 150. And that will be available for NBC Gold Trackcast members. But keep in mind, you can always listen to the races at ArcaRacing.com. They have a radio coverage going on at that location as well. So if you don't have Trackpass, you can listen via the radio at ArcaRacing.com. So let's go ahead and cover the series points there for the West, Jay.
Here we got a complete opposite, East Coast, West Coast, totally opposites. Todd Souza is your points leader by best finish. He's tied with Dean Thompson with 112 points. Stat lines almost identical. One top five. Souza does have three top tens, whereas Dean Thompson only has two. But it's tight all the way through. We have 11 drivers who have made all three starts. Cole Moore is in third, technically, at 1 point back, minus two back now with the win is Jesse Love. Then you got Jake Drew at minus eight. Trevor Huddleston as well at minus eight takes you through sixth place. Paul Prejinasili Jr. is at minus 11. Here, Joey East is at minus 19. Bridget Burgess back 23. Bobby Hillis Jr. at minus 24. And Takuma Koga at minus 30. So what was the 30-point gap from first to second on the East runs you through 11th place here in the West. And we've seen that the first two events they had were kind of combination events, one with the Arca Menards main series in Phoenix, and then a combination with Cup Series out at Sonoma, which was won by Chase Briscoe. So we're going to see this start sorting itself out as we saw Jesse Love climb up to now the fourth spot with that victory. But that's an unbelievable points battle right there.
Yes, it is, and only three races in, so they still have quite a bit more racing to do. So this next event is going to be kind of a big deal because this is where I think things are going to sort themselves out here for the Arca Menards Series West. And I think that the cream is going to rise to the top, and we'll see who that is going to be.
Well, Jesse Love has already started, that's for sure, but these guys know that this is their shot to shine here in the Arca Menards West.
It certainly is. So, again, you don't want to miss these races. They are exciting to watch. A lot of door-to-door, bumper-to-bumper racing between these drivers. And keep in mind, this is where the future stars of NASCAR come from is the Arca Menards Series. So, in fact, two drivers with Arca Menards Series ties are landing full-time NASCAR Cup Series rides, and I'm sure we'll talk about that on Hot Topics tonight. But Harrison Burton, the Arca Menards Series East champion, and Austin Cindric are both moving up to the Cup Series next year. Harrison Burton with Wood Brothers Racing in the number 21, and then also Austin Cindric moving into the number 2 for Team Penske. So pretty exciting news today.
Well, I don't know if we're voting on that. If I get a vote, I think we should talk about that later in Hot Topics.
Yeah, we will. We will definitely touch on that topic. There, it did it to me again. So for some reason, when I hit the back button, it takes me to a completely different place. Okay, let's go ahead and do our Arca Menards Series preview because they are racing at one of the premier tracks on the circuit, and that is Berlin Raceway in Marne, Michigan. And this is going to be exciting. The sixth No, it's more than that, I guess, for the Yarko Menards series. But this race will take place this Saturday, July the 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. It will be televised on MAV-TV, and also live streaming is available at TrackPass on NBC Sports Go. Of course, you can always have the radio coverage as well at ArcaRacing.com. The track layout is a 7/16 of a mile paved oval, and they'll be racing 200 laps to cover a distance of 88 miles. Now, they'll have Saturday practice at 4:15 p.m., qualifying at 6 p.m., and the race, again, is at 8 p.m. Those times are Eastern time. So a lot for fans to look forward to with this race, because this will be the fourth race, I know, for the Sioux Chief Showdown.
It will be number 4 for the Sioux Chief Showdown, number 10 for the ARCA Menards Series, and their short track stretch continues here at Berlin. You can call it the summer of short track racing for the ARCA Menards Series, or at least the July of short track racing. Now, this comes a week after Corey Heim stunned observers when he pushed Ty Gibbs out of the way to win at Elko Speedway. And now the series visits another paved oval smaller than a half mile in length. So it's going to be interesting when we get to Berlin.
Without a doubt. Now, Saturday night, Sinzer Smart Coat 200 at the 7/16 of a mile at Berlin's Raceway in Marnie, Michigan, marks the third short track race of the 2021 season for the ARCA Menards Series. The event is the second of four consecutive short track races on the schedule through the end of this month. And the series will also visit Iowa Speedway on July 24th. By the way, that will be a combination event with the ARCA East. And then it was announced today that on July the 31st, they'll be racing at Winchester Speedway. So tickets are still available. Keep in mind, again, the broadcast will be on MAV-TV Motorsports Network starting at 8 p.m. Eastern with the live stream available on NBC Sports Gold Track Pass.
Well, July is a hot month. We call it the summer, and short tracks can cause some hot tempers. So because of what happened at Elko, all eyes at Berlin will be on Heims and Gibbs. Heim, as a result of his fourth victory of the season, coupled with Gibbs' fourth-place run last week, now has a 7-point lead over his rival in the championship standings, entering the 10th of 20 races on the schedule. The 19-year-old Venturini Motorsports driver viewed his aggressive move in the closing laps at Elko as a bit more of revenge for what he deemed hostile driving by the 18-year-old Joe Gibbs racing driver earlier in the race. Now, we'll soon find out whether Ty Gibbs views Saturday night's race at Berlin as a chance to get his revenge on Corey Heim.
Now, Gibbs and Heim are among the ARCA Menards Series regulars on the entry list for the Zinser Smart Coat 200, but there's also Thad Moffitt, Nick Sanchez, the drivers who rank third and fourth in points, respectively. They are also entered. So Heim's win at Elko led a podium sweep for Venturini Motorsports, as part-time drivers Jesse Love and Gracie Trotter finished second and third, respectively, each setting a new career best. And both Love and Trotter are entered again this weekend, Jay.
That's going to be interesting for sure. Love, as the defending ARCA Menards Series West champion, is going to make his third ARCA Menards Series start for the team, whereas Trotter will be making her sixth start for VMS.
Love and Trotter were teammates as full-time competitors in the West Series for Bill McAnally Racing last season. And when the latter became the first female to win a race on the ARCA Menards platform, that was at the Las Vegas Bullring in September. And Love still races full-time for BMR in the West Series and is hoping and looking to repeat as a champion again this year.
Now, another one we got to look at is Taylor Gray. He's a 16-year-old David Gilliland racing driver who was sidelined from Arca Menard Series competition for 13 weeks as he recovered from injuries sustained in an April streetcar accident. He made his return to the platform last week at Elko and finished fifth. He also will race again here at Berlin. And the Berlin event marks the second of five consecutive Arca Menard Series races in which Gray plans to compete.
Okay, also there's two drivers who made their series debut last weekend at Elko, and they are back in the field for this Saturday night's race at Berlin. That includes Daniel Dye, who finished seventh at Elko. He's going to run his second Arca Menard Series race for GMS Racing. And then Adam Lemke, who finished 10th at Elko, is back in the seat for Rhett Jones Racing. So let's take a look at the rest of the entry list, Jay. Why don't we go bottom up two by two?
All right. I will start at the bottom there. The 06 is Elaine Peterson, owned and crew chief Ward, going to be driven by Zachary Tinkle from Speedway, Indiana. And then you got the Hillenburg Ford, Michelle Hillenburg listed as the owner of the Mike Basham-driven Fast Track Racing Ford. Crew chief will be Trey Galgun.
Okay, and the number 50 is Morgan Alexander from Griffith, Georgia. He'll be driving that number 50 Chevrolet. Cody Afar is listed as the owner, but they have not yet named who the crew chief will be. Then in the number 48 is a staple in the Arca Menard Series, Brad Smith from Shelby Township, Michigan. He'll be in the Chevrolet for his own team with Jeff Smith on top of the pit box.
Well, another Smith is Derek Smith, and he'll be crew chiefing for Thad Moffitt in the Johnny Gray-owned number 46 Ford. Moffitt, relative there of the Petty, Richard Petty, coming out of Trinity, North Carolina. And then mentioned Adam Lemke coming out of Hollister, California. He'll be in the number 30 Mark Rhett Ford, which Rhett is going to crew chief himself.
Okay. And then from Morris, Illinois, is Alex Club in the number 27 Ford, owned by David Richmond. His crew chief will be Brad Fry. On top of the pit box for the number 25 Venturini Motorsports Toyota is Billy Venturini for driver Gracie Trotter from Denver, North Carolina.
We mentioned GMS Racing Chevrolet owner Murray Gallagher and crew chief Chad Bryant teaming up again to help Daniel Dye in the number 21. Dye coming out of Demon, Florida. And then our points leader, the number 20 Venturini Motorsports Toyota of Corey Heim, who comes out of Marietta, Georgia, and he'll have regular crew chief Shannon Rush in his ear.
Okay, and his toughest competitor is none other than Ty Gibbs in the number 18 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota from Huntersville, North Carolina. Coy Gibbs is the team owner, and Mark McFarlane is the crew chief. The crew chief in the number 17 Ford for David Gilliland Racing is Chad Johnston, and Taylor Gray will be behind the wheel of that Ford Performance car. He hails from Denver, North Carolina.
Another Venturini Toyota is the number 15 we mentioned, Jesse Love, coming out of Redwood City, California. Kevin Reed as his crew chief. And then the number 12 is a Hillenburg Toyota, Dick Doheny, who I thought we saw on the entry list as a driver. Maybe not. I thought he was listed as a driver. But not this week. Okay. I thought I saw his name. But the driver this weekend at number 12 out of Mansfield, Ohio, is Tony Cosentino.
Okay, and in the number 11 Ford for Andy Hillenburg is Mason Mingus from Brentwood, Tennessee. On top of his pit box is Jeff McClure. In the number 10 Fast Track Racing Toyota for Andy Hillenburg is Owen Smith from Louisa, Virginia, and Mike Shroop is his crew chief.
And I believe it was number 17, the final entry on the list, Nick Sanchez, driving the number 2 Rev Racing, Max Siegel Incorporated, NTI-UTI sponsored Chevrolet. Max Siegel, the owner. Steve Plattenberger is the crew chief. And Sanchez coming out of Miami, Florida.
Okay, so this is going to be exciting because I think we will see some drivers hopefully emerge from this race. This is one of those tough short track events. They mentioned that there's several on the schedule for this month. And you know what, Jay, very seldom do people come away happy after a short track event. Usually there's only one happy driver at the short track.
Yeah, you got a point there. One thing I want to point out, I don't know if fans are familiar with, a short track late model driver to keep your eye on, Mason Mingus in that number 11. He is a short track ace around the Tennessee and in the late model division. So it'll be interesting to see how he does here in the ARCA Menards series.
Without a doubt. I agree with you. I think Mason Mingus is definitely one of the drivers to keep your eye on this weekend. But you got to also consider both Jesse Love and Gracie Trotter. Jesse recently won, but they finished second and third last weekend at the race in this ARCA Menards series. And they're normally ARCA West drivers, and now they're racing in the bigger series here with the ARCA Menards series. So I keep my eye on them as well.
Well, and that's what we love about this, Sioux Chief Showdown events. I mean, we've seen them do it in a couple of other events, but specifically in the Sioux Chief Showdown event, where you have that specifically set up for these drivers to run with the ARCA Menards series and battle for a separate point standing. Which series do you want to look at first, the Sioux Chief Showdown or
the
regular series?
Let's look at the Sioux Chief Showdown and end with the regular series.
All right. For the Sioux Chief Showdown, you still have the same two at the top of the list. Ty Gibbs, 3 starts, 2 wins, and a fourth place. So a 3 top 5 in all 3 events. And he has a 4-point lead over Corey Heim. Heim has 1 win, 1 second, and then a top 5, or another one in the top 10. So that's where the 4-point difference comes in. But then you got Nick Sanchez is only 8 points back. Thad Moffitt at 115 is 11 points back. Brad Smith is your 5th place driver. Owen Smith in 6th. And those 6 drivers are the ones that have made all 3 events. You mentioned Jesse Love, 2 starts, such a good finish there. 2nd is into the 7th place at 82 points. And Gracie Trotter right behind him. Same thing of only 2 starts, but right up there in the battle with that, a good finish of 3rd.
Okay. And then let's take a look at the ARCA Menards series and their point standings.
Well, here you got to swap the names as it's Corey Heim that's on top. Mention that he has a whole 7-point lead now over Ty Gibbs. 9 races in, Heim has 4 wins, Gibbs has 5. They both have 8 top 5s. Corey Heim has 1 additional top 10. He's got 9 top 10s versus Ty Gibbs' 8. Now, for the 9 races, we only have 4 drivers that have made all 9 races. So Thad Moffitt is 3rd in points, 65 back from the points lead. Nick Sanchez, 5 top 5s, sits at minus 88. Then we get into Drew Dollar, Kyle Sieg. Both have 7 races under their belts, 167, 192 back respectively. Brad Smith does have 8 starts, but is in 7th. D.L. Wilson, Jack Wood, and Tim Richmond all sit at 6 races each and are 200 and some plus points back. So the battle is really the top 4. And unless something drastic happens, which could happen, here's what we're talking about, Corey Heim and Ty Gibbs. If they get into a personal battle, Thad Moffitt, Nick Sanchez, all they got to do is stay out of the way, and they're going to capitalize on it.
Yeah, it's very possible they could take each other out. And if that happens, that opens the door for the next drivers. All these other drivers want to make sure they put themselves in position to capitalize on that if indeed it does happen. Okay.
Like you said, we'll see what kind of the tempers come out of Berlin. And I just in my mind, I'm like, talk about a short track stretch where tempers are going to be, especially during the heat of July or August, that summer stretch, no worse time to be at a stretch of short tracks.
Exactly. Again, that next race is this Saturday, July the 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, you can visit the Race Center over at ArcaRacing.com to keep up with all of the action or to listen to the radio coverage there. So definitely one worth checking out. If you haven't checked out the Arca Menard Series yet, now's the time to do it because this is going to get exciting.
You're right. This would be the time to be watching as we see this battle heat up even more. I think it was down to, what, 2 or 3 point lead, maybe even 1 point that Corey Heim had, stretched it out, if you will, to 7 points.
So, yes, indeed. So he's going to want to try to hang on to that lead. Ty Gibbs is going to try to minimize the lead and close that gap as much as he possibly can. So fans will have to tune in and find out if they're able to compete with one another and finish the race or if they're going to take each other out. So let's make sure everybody tunes in this Saturday night. Okay, so with that, Jay, let's go ahead and move on. I know we're a couple minutes early, but I want to give the update for the Truck Series. They are not racing this weekend. And I'm hoping we'll have a few minutes left over at the end of the Truck Series update so that we can also give an update on our Fan for Racing Fantasy Group.
All right.
Okay, so let's go with the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. Their next race is the United Rentals 176 at Watkins Glen International. Now, we're going to have to wait for this one because it's a three-week gap between now and their next race, which is Saturday, August the 7th. The time of the race is 12:30 p.m. Eastern. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1, and their coverage will start at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Radio coverage on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. So we'll give more details as we get closer to that event. But let's take a look at the clinch scenarios now that they've finished their race, their last race.
Well, how much more build can you get as they head into the regular season finale, and it's on the road course of Watkins Glen International, and coming off a three-week break. So some of these drivers might be amped up. So we'll see them at the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series August 7th at Watkins Glen International, and it'll be that last chance for drivers to secure their spot into the playoffs. Now we have 7 drivers that have already clinched a spot in the 10-driver postseason field. Those include John Hunter Nemechek, Ben Rhodes, Austin Hill, Todd Gillen, Zane Smith, Matt Crafton, and Sheldon Creed. Now, with this final race, if there's a new winner, the following drivers could clinch by being ahead of the fifth winless driver in the standings. Carson Hocevar would clinch with 35 points, Stuart Friesen with 43, Chandler Smith, and Derek Krause can only do so with a little bit of help. Now, if there's a repeat winner, the following drivers, then they got to clinch by being ahead of the 6 winless drivers in the standings, and they would also clinch if there is a new winner among Zane Smith, Crafton, Hocevar, Stuart Friesen, or Chandler Smith, and then being ahead of the 5th winless driver. Now, if there is that repeat winner again under this category, Carson Hocevar would clinch regardless of finish. Stuart Friesen would only need 3 points. Chandler Smith would need 15. Derek Krause can still only clinch with a little bit of help. And then Tyler Ankrum could only clinch with help and cannot clinch if it's a Chandler Smith win. Same goes for Johnny Sauter. He needs help, and it cannot be Chandler Smith who gets the win.
Now, by what they mean when they say they need with a little help, they're saying that some drivers are going to have a bad – some of the good drivers are going to have a bad day so that they can have a good day.
That's right. You're right. They need to have a great finish, and somebody else, unfortunately, would have to have a couple of drivers. Like Johnny Sauter has to have a couple of bad people finish in front of him. So,
mm-hmm.
Now, we still have a couple drivers mentioned there that can clinch on their win alone. And that's Carson Hocevar, Stuart Friesen, Chandler Smith, Derek Krause, Tyler Ankrum, and Johnny Sauter, but also Austin Wayne Self, Ryan Truex, Haley Deegan, Tanner Gray, and Chase Purdy. And there's one driver who can clinch with a win, and if he clinched the top 20 position in points, and that's Tate Fogelman. And he would clinch then with the 45 points above 20th, even if he gets the win.
Okay, so it's possible he could win but still not make it in if he's below that top 20.
That's a tough position to be in, let me tell you that.
It certainly is. Okay, let's talk about Kyle Busch Motorsports and John Hunter Nemechek. He actually clinched the regular season championship with his 31 points he earned this past weekend at Knoxville Raceway. So he's locked up his NASCAR Camping World Truck Series regular season championship for the 2021 season and has also pocketed 15 playoff points that go along with that. So to boot, Kyle Busch Motorsports becomes the first organization to win multiple times. So the list of NASCAR Camping World Truck Series regulars, you've got in 2017 it was Christopher Bell for Kyle Busch Motorsports. In 2018, it was Johnny Sauter for GMS Racing. In 19, Grant Infinger won the championship for Thor Sport Racing. In 2020, Austin Hill took home the championship trophy for Hattori Racing Enterprises. And in 2021, it is now John Hunter Nemechek for Kyle Busch Motorsports. That makes two in the last 5 years. So John Hunter Nemechek has made 14 starts this season, posting a series, leading 5 wins. He has 8 top 5s and 11 top 10s. So a great season for John Hunter Nemechek.
Well, and we expected that with him coming back to the Truck Series as well as specifically Kyle Busch Motorsports. Now, when we look at the Camping World Truck Series, again, they're going on a three-week hiatus following another action-packed Camping World Truck Series track debut at Knoxville Raceway last weekend. We did see Hattori Racing Enterprises' Austin Hill get his first win of the season. Now, the series will take a three-week hiatus for the Olympic break and return to the track we mentioned August 7th for that regular season finale at Watkins Glen International for the United Reynolds 176. Be on at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time, FS1, MRN, or Sirius XM Radio. It'll be the first time the Camping World Truck Series has competed at Watkins Glen since 2000. I didn't realize it had been that long. Prior to this season, Camping World Truck Series only competed at Watkins Glen International 5 times. Now, WGI is located just outside Watkins Glen, New York, is a multi-elevational 7-turn road course that spans 2.45 miles. The first Camping World Truck Series race at the Glen took place back on August 25th, 1996, and it was won by NASCAR Hall of Famer Ron Hornaday Jr., and he was driving the Dale Earnhardt Incorporated Chevrolet. The 5 Camping World Truck Series races at Watkins Glen have produced 4 different winners, led by Ron Fellows, who picked up in 97 and 99. We mentioned Hornaday in 96, driving for DEI. Fellows in 97, driving for Billy Heiss Racing. Joe Ruttman in 98, driving for Roush Fenway Racing. 99, it was Fellows again, this time for Nimco Motorsports, the Nemechek family. And then in 2000, it was Greg Biffle with Roush Fenway Racing. I love these history pieces.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like hearing those things as well. And as predicted, we've got a few minutes here, so let's go ahead and give our fantasy racing point standings for the Fan for Racing group.
We have talked about some amazing points battles, and we're going to talk about some here now as I get my stat sheets up here. We'll start with the truck series we just talked about. Going to have to wait a little bit. But, Sharon, you are back on top of the truck series, and you have a whopping one-point lead over Andy. Sharon is at 59, Andy at 58. Mike is right in it at 53. I'm behind him at 52. Tommy's at 49, Owen at 47, Sam at 36, and James at 24. 25 points top to bottom. And with this being the final race, after that we go double points. So 25 points isn't much. Moving over to the Xfinity Series, Andy is the one that gets to hold that 1 point above Mike. Andy's sitting at 70 points. Mike is at 69. Sam has jumped into this battle now at 65. James right behind him at 64. And I'm at 63. Owen and Sharon are tied at 59. And Tommy at 54. That means eight of us playing this year, bottom to top in the Xfinity Series, 16 points. That is a one playoff race, but we got a few more in the Xfinity Series here before we get there. We'll see how tight that gets. On the Cup side, I think we had another big shift here. Sam is now the points leader, and he's got two whole points. He's at 107. I'm at 105, and I got 2 points over Mike, who's at 103. Sharon is at 92. Owen right behind her at 91. Then Tommy at 84. James at 82. And Andy at 46. Now, I know I mentioned this. Got to give a shout-out to Tommy. He's missed a few races to start the season before he joined us. Getting right into it, he's been on a hot streak lately. And Andy, I know he's sticking with Chase Briscoe, waiting on to get his official pick for this weekend, which I imagine once again in the Cup Series will be Chase Briscoe, but I'll wait for him to officially post it. Definitely standing by his man. And for the overall, this one's tightened up some again. Mike is at 225. I'm at 220. Sharon is now at 210. And Sam at 208. There's only 17 points there, top to bottom on the overall. Owen just outside that 200 mark at 197. Mentioned Tommy making a climb. He's at 187. James at 180. And then Andy at 174. So we're talking 51 points there on the overall for three series, which right now is still 21 points per weekend if they all three race. This has been such an amazing season with all eight of us doing this, and the points has just been week to week of who gets ahead of who by 1 point.
Yeah, it's been tight all season long. I enjoyed a lead early in the year, but that has vanished, and now I'm fighting and clawing my way back.
It certainly has been interesting. I know we joke around with who took whose pick each week, and that's part of it. We still got 10 more minutes if you want. I'll run through. We got a few of the picks in already for this weekend for the Cup Series and Xfinity Series at New Hampshire.
Yeah, you can go ahead and cover that. And then I also have some notes here for the SRL that is racing as well.
All right. On the Xfinity Series, Sam went first, took Austin Cindric. I really had a debate. I'm going to go with Josh Berry filling in for Michael Annette. Mike took Christopher Bell, who I didn't even realize was on the entry list, but good short track racer, going to be up there in New Hampshire. Andy Lasky took Justin Allgaier, and James took Gregson. The two of us have kind of been the two that take Noah Gregson. I lost a little faith in him, so I went with Berry. And let's see, I'll tag Owen. Owen will be the next one up to make a pick there. On the Cup side, let's see, Mike started us there, and he took KFB, which stands for Kyle Busch.
Yeah.
Next went Owen, and he took Denny Hamlin. I think it was a great pick. James just sent his in, and he took Chase Elliott. So that puts Andy up, and he is most likely going to take Chase Briscoe. We'll see if he sticks by his gun. And that will put me up, and I actually got to think about this because Denny Hamlin is one of them I was really considering. And I know last year this is where Brad Keselowski turned it on again and got his win, but I don't know if I can pass on Kyle Larson. So here in the next few minutes I'll put that up because I do believe Andy's going to stick with Chase Briscoe.
Okay. Interesting. And, of course, the Truck Series is not racing this weekend, so there will be no movement there. Okay, but racing this week is the SRL, the Southwest Racing Tour, Spears SRL Southwest Touring Series, and this is race number 7 of 10 for that series. It will take place this Saturday, July the 17th, at Irwindale Speedway, and they're going to have a payout of $10,000 for the winner, and that's thanks to David Mulcahy. And Salted Metals and Mulcahy has been a longtime supporter of the series and has sponsored big-paying events over the last 6 months. Glenn Davis with Pinnacle Peak Steakhouse will present barbecue for the teams on Friday night, and that's always a very popular event. Also, the Pro Late Models for the Spears Series, presented by Sigma Performance Services, will compete in the Spears Manufacturing 60, presented by Optima Barriers, for a $3,000 to win bonus. It will also be round 7 of their 11 race season, and round 7 for the Spears Modified Series will see teams compete in the General Tire 60 presented by CompCams, paying a $1,500 to win. Both the Pro Late Models and the Modifieds will compete on the inner one-third mile oval with the Super Late Models on the half mile. So there's a big championship battle going on. Derek Thorne turned his victory at Kern County Raceway into a championship lead. Thorne now leads Buddy Shepard by 13 points. And the 2015 SRL champion Jacob Gomes trails Shepard by 36 markers. Then it's Cole Raz, Cale Kenke, who round out the top five. And there have been 4 different championship leaders in six events. Preston Peltier, Jacob Gomes, Buddy Shepard, and now Thorne. Thorne, Shepard, and Gomes have battled it out for the win in the last 2 races. Thorne beat Shepard at All-American Speedway after Gomes suffered a flat tire while leading with just 4 laps to go. He beat Gomes at Kern County Raceway after a feverish battle with Shepard, which resulted in contact relegating Shepard to a third-place finish. Now, Jeremy Joss leads the championship standings in both the Pro Late Models and the Modifieds, and he does lead Dylan Zampa, Logan Zampa, Mike Lavelle, Tanner Rafe, and the Pro Late Models, and second, Eddie Secord, Travis McCullough, and Sam Jacks in the Modifieds. Now, there's a throwdown challenge here for anybody who can beat Derek Thorne in these last 5 events. So Motor City Throwdown is putting up $2,500 for the first driver who can beat Thorne with just 4 events left on the schedule. There'll be 4 opportunities to pull off that beat. If nobody can beat Thorne, he will take home the $2,500 himself. If someone beats Thorn this weekend, they will take home $12,500. So that's pretty cool to throw that into the mix here for this group in the Southwest Spears Southwest Touring Series.
Well, you know somebody's tough to beat when they put out a bounty or whatever you want to call it, a challenge like that to beat one driver.
Yes. So Derek Thorn is such a popular driver out there in that area. And they're racing at Irwindale, which is, as you know, a very big track out in the West. And it's going to be tough to do, but we'll see if anybody can make that happen this weekend.
I just look forward to then. Hopefully I get to see some great action shots from Sal Segala. I love watching his posts following race weekends because he puts up some amazing shots.
He really does. And I'll tell you what, if you do want to follow the race, you can head over to the Spears Southwest Touring Series website because they'll have a television version, a streaming version of that race will be available at their website. So that's pretty cool as well.
Most certainly, however you can get to watch it.
So without a doubt. Okay, now then, let me see if I can give you that website address. It is www.srlsouthwesttour.com, and you can watch it on Spears Racing TV at that website. So just an FYI there. For those of you who think you cannot see that race, yes, you can. So just head on over to srlsouthwesttour.com to watch that on Spears Racing TV. Okay, now let's go ahead and move on to the Xfinity Series. They are racing this weekend the Ambetter Get Vaccinated 200 at New Hampshire Motor Speedway this Saturday, July the 17th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, this event will have their pre-race coverage on NBC Sports Network starting at 2:30 p.m. as well as on PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll be racing a distance of 211.6 miles over 200 laps. The first two stages are 45 laps apiece, with the first stage ending on lap 45, the second stage on lap 90, and the last stage ends on the last lap, lap 200, making that segment 110 laps. So, Jay, a lot to look forward to here in the Xfinity Series because they still have, what, about 8 races left to go?
Let's see if, I don't know if I saw where, how many they have left, but I know here for New Hampshire, we're going to need a scorecard. Okay. 8 races left in the Xfinity Series before their regular season ends. This weekend though at New Hampshire, you're only going to want to get your scorecard out if you're following along. We got Spencer Boyd. He's going to be joining Jimmy Means Racing this weekend. He'll compete in his first Xfinity Series race of the season at New Hampshire. It'll be his first start in the series since 2018, and he's going to pilot the number 52 Chevrolet for Jimmy Means Racing and sponsored by Freedom Warranty. Now, this season, Boyd has run 11 NASCAR Camping World Truck Series races for Young Motorsports. Now, Gray Galding is still Jimmy Means Racing's primary driver. This is just a one-race deal based on sponsorship for Boyd. Total, Boyd has made 41 starts in the Xfinity Series and has a best finish of 17th, coming back in Daytona in 2018.
Okay, another one to keep your eye on this weekend is Patrick Emmerling. He's joining Our Motorsports. They announced the addition of Patrick Emmerling to their driver lineup for the number 23 Chevrolet. He will pilot the car this Saturday at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Emmerling, who is 28, made his Xfinity Series debut last year at Bristol Motor Speedway for Our Motorsports. He started 20th and finished 29th. This weekend will mark his second career start.
Another name we haven't heard in a while, and that'll be Andrew Ranger. He'll be running the Xfinity race at New Hampshire. As Rick Ware Racing announced that he will run at New Hampshire Motor Speedway, piloting the number 17. In addition to fielding the full-time NASCAR Pinty Series entry for 2021. Ranger is the defending Pinty Series champion. He'll pilot the number 51. Ranger has made a total of 17 Xfinity Series start, most recently in 2013. I don't know how recent that is. That's why I said we haven't heard that name in a while. But of those starts, he has one top five and two top tens. Of those starts, none of them were at New Hampshire, so this will mark his debut at the track.
Cover the next one, Jay, because for whatever reason, it keeps deleting my news and notes.
All right. Another one that's going to be back in the Xfinity Series this weekend is Christopher Bell. Mentioned Mike had taken him as his pick. He's going to return to the Xfinity Series this weekend at New Hampshire in the number 54 Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing. Bell has competed in the Xfinity Series for three seasons. He was full-time in 2018 and 19. Got a total of 74 career starts with 16 wins, 41 top fives, 46 top tens, and 12 poles. In the two Xfinity Series starts at New Hampshire, he won the race and led a total. He has won the race once and led a total of 279 laps. Keeping in mind, they need to fill that 54 now as Kyle Busch has hit his max of five for the year and probably done now for his career.
Yes, indeed. So we'll see Christopher Bell in that car this weekend. Now we're going to take a look at the Manufacturer Championship. It's actually up for grabs and a very close call. Chevrolet is still in the lead in the Manufacturer's Championship standings, but not by much, as Toyota is catching up quickly. Now with last weekend's Toyota victory by Kyle Busch, Chevrolet and Toyota are now equal with 7 points. Chevrolet has 657 points, and Toyota is only behind 7 points now at 650. Ford is third with 4 wins and 600 points. It's a close call for the champ, 8 races to go before the playoff begins. There are a lot of potential outcomes up for grabs. Now, Chevrolet has won the last 4 manufacturer championships, and the last time Ford won was in 2013, and a Toyota won most recently in 2016. So this is going to be interesting to see how this plays out with Toyota right on the heels of Chevrolet this season.
Another points battle that is certainly up for grabs, and that's the Sunoco rookie class. We'll give you an update there. Barry is still on top. And Josh Berry has held off Joe Gibbs Racing up-and-coming talent Ty Gibbs in the Sunoco Rookie of the Year standings for several weeks. Berry has 362 points with 5 awards, while Gibbs has 6 awards but only 330 points. Ryan Vargas is third with Jade Buford in fourth, and Sam Mayer now collecting points is currently in fifth. Now, Berry is entered to run this weekend at New Hampshire New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Again, he'll be back at Junior Motorsports replacing an injured Mike Lynette. Gibbs is not currently entered to run, so it's likely that Barry will hold on to that lead again post-New Hampshire. Now, for Barry, he's trying to get a full-time ride in one of the NASCAR National Series. Every opportunity in a Sunoco Rookie of the Year award would just add to his resume. That same goes for Gibbs, who is also trying to move up and into the series full-time. Mentioned the top two there at 362 and 330 points. Barry with 5 awards, Gibbs with 6. Ryan Vargas has picked up the award as best finishing rookie 4 times, but only has a total of 185 points. Mentioned Jay Buford, 110 points, 1 award. And Sam Mayer has already picked up 1 award in his limited starts, now has a total of 49 points. So we'll see how those shake up. Mayer, I think, is going to be the one to watch in the second half, along with Ty Gibbs and Josh Berry.
Without a doubt. Now, you mentioned this earlier. Josh Berry is filling in for the injured Michael Annette. He's a NASCAR Xfinity Series part-timer, and he ran the beginning of the season for Junior Motorsports in the number 8 Chevrolet. But he's going to be back with the organization this weekend again at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Michael Annette, who's a full-time driver in the number 1 Chevrolet, has not been cleared to race after an MRI revealed that he has a stress fracture on his right femur. Now, Annette will undergo surgery on Tuesday afternoon, and I believe that's this past Tuesday. Berry will replace Annette with Junior Motorsports and has been approved for a playoff waiver for Annette so that he can still be playoff eligible upon his return. So Annette is the one that they're talking about who has that playoff waiver due to this medical situation. Now, after the race weekend at New Hampshire, NASCAR has a 2-week break for the Olympics in Tokyo, which will give Annette some extra time to heal. Now, Annette was supposed to compete in the Camping World Truck Series race at Knoxville Raceway last Friday, but Chris Windham filled in for him. And the following day at Atlanta Motor Speedway, Austin Dillon filled in for Annette in the Xfinity Series race. Annette is right now 11th in the playoff standings, one spot above the cutoff line. Berry has made 15 of 18 starts this season for Junior Motorsports and Jordan Anderson Racing. He now leads the Sunoco Rookie of the Year standings that Jay just outlined for everyone. And Saturday's race will mark Berry's debut at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. So this is a great opportunity for Josh Berry to race again for Junior Motorsports, and that will help him maintain his hold on that Rookie of the Year standings.
I didn't realize it was his New Hampshire debut. That makes me a little nervous about that pick, but Martinsville being where he did pick up his victory, a short track super late model driver, I'll stay with him.
Okay.
Now, the playoff bubble in the Xfinity Series, the chances are dwindling down. We're not out of them yet, but they're getting lower. We've got 8 races left in the regular season. It's time to take a look at the NASCAR Xfinity Series playoff clinch scenarios heading into this weekend's race at New Hampshire Motor Speedway, the Ambetter Get Vaccinated 200. Again, it will be Saturday at 3 p.m., being covered on NBCSN, PRN, and SiriusXM Radio. A win gets you in, but drivers must still clinch their spot on points by accumulating enough points that even with a win, they do not fall out of the top 30 in the Xfinity Series and thus become ineligible for the playoffs. Already clinched, we have 3 drivers that have clinched a spot in the 12-driver Xfinity Series postseason, and that's Austin Cindric, A.J. Allmendinger, and Justin Allgaier. No new drivers clinched a spot following Atlanta. Now coming up at New Hampshire, Jeb Burton has already clinched the top 30 spot, and with the win, he would clinch his playoff spot on wins. There are some scenarios for clinching the regular season championships. That's Austin Cindric. Actually cannot clinch the regular season championship yet this weekend, even with his 4 wins and 748 points, because second place at 674 can still reach 1,154. So he's going to have to wait about maybe two more weeks, depending on how he runs. Now we'll go over an outline of the current playoff standings following Atlanta and heading into New Hampshire this weekend. Austin Cindric is in on wins. I mentioned he's got 4 wins already, a total of 27 playoff points. Second is A.J. Allmendinger, has a pair of wins, 5 stage wins, gives him a total of 15 playoff points. Allgaier, 2 wins, has 1 stage win, 11 playoff points. Jeb Burton and Myatt Snyder, each with a win, and only that win gives him 5 playoff points. Daniel Hemric doesn't have a win, but 5 stage wins, still comes out to 5 playoff points. And he's 245 points above the cut line, being that he's not locked in on a win yet. Then you got Harrison Burton, has a pair of stage wins for 2 points, 181 to the good. Justin Haley, three stage wins for 3 points, 146 up. Noah Gregson on the climb now is up to ninth, two stage wins, has 128 points to the good. 10th place, Brandon Jones, one playoff point based on a stage win, 97 to the good. Here's where it's going to get interesting. Right now, mentioned Michael Annette is 11th in points, but will miss this weekend's race for sure. He's got 59-point cushion. We'll have to see if that is enough to maintain at least into the break. Jeremy Clements right now is the bubble driver, and he is 54 points to the good. The one that's 54 out, that would be Riley Herbst. Brandon Brown is 56 out. Ryan Sieg and Alex LeBay, 15th and 16th in points, 94 back and 137 back. The two drivers that are 50-some points out, that can be done within one weekend. So that's where it's going to get real interesting. Brandon Brown, Riley Herbst, and then Jeremy Clements and Michael Annette. Those four are going to shift up no matter what, being that Michael Annette's going to drop some. From there, it would depend on, as we talked about earlier, some help from other drivers in order for them to close in on points.
Yes, indeed. But it is getting interesting, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens as these next eight races play out. Now, we've watched Kyle Busch keep winning. He was 5-for-5 as he wraps up his Xfinity Series career with his fifth win this season. He keeps on winning in the Xfinity Series in this season. To be exact, he's won 5 times at the Circuit of the Americas, Texas Motor Speedway, Nashville Super Speedway, Road America, and Atlanta Motor Speedway. He took the win each time, making it a perfect 5-for-5. Now, Busch has said that that was his final Xfinity Series race on Saturday. Is the winningest driver in Xfinity Series here's three with 102 wins. In 362 starts over 19 years, he has 225 top fives, 263 top tens, and 70 poles. That's just remarkable. He's led 20,088 laps, and he has an average start of 7.6 with an average finish of 8.9. So what a remarkable run for Kyle Busch in the Xfinity Series. And to discover now, we knew it was coming, but this was his last season racing in the Xfinity Series. And the last time we'll see him go 5-to-5 in that with that group.
Truthfully, the one that caught my attention there was the starts over 19 years. I hadn't realized he had been running in the Xfinity Series now for 19 years.
Isn't that incredible?
It certainly is, because I remember when he came in with Hendrick Motorsports in that number 5, actually.
Yes. That's true.
Now, up next, we got the NASCAR Xfinity Series heading to the Granite State. We're going to race at New Hampshire Motor Speedway for that Ambetter Get Vaccinated 200. We've got 8 races left in the regular season. Time is now becoming of the essence for competitors vying for that spot in the 12-driver playoff field. We'll talk about last week in a little bit. The NASCAR Xfinity Series visited Atlanta Motor Speedway for the second time of the year and mentioned Joe Gibbs Racing's Kyle Busch made it a perfect 5-for-5 on the year, grabbing his fifth win in as many starts. We look ahead to this weekend. New Hampshire Motor Speedway will host the 34th NASCAR Xfinity Series race at the 1.058-mile track. The Xfinity Series didn't visit Loudoun, New Hampshire track last season due to COVID-19 protocols, so it'll be the first race back since 2019. The previous 33 races at New Hampshire, 26 different race winners and 19 pole winners. Only 9 races have been won from the pole position, And that was most recently done in 2017 by Kyle Busch. The last time the series competed at New Hampshire, it was 2019. It was Christopher Bell who won the race from the second starting position. There were five cautions for 28 laps and five lead changes. Average speed was 104.365 miles per hour. Race lasted 2 hours, 1 minute, and 39 seconds. There were 1,059 green flag passes. The margin of victory was a 4.068. That's a big margin of victory at New Hampshire. Now, the last five Xfinity Series races at New Hampshire are all from the Joe Gibbs Racing camp. And they're no longer in the Xfinity Series full-time, though. And Denny Hamlin won it in 2015. Kyle Busch, which I mentioned, did it in 16 and 17. And then Bell in 18 and 19. Now, Bell is the only one of those three that will come back to the series and run this weekend. And Sharon covered this weekend's And Better Get Vaccinated 200. It'll be 211.6 miles for 200 laps. Stage 1 will end on lap 45. Stage 2 on lap 90. And the final stage into the race will be at the 200-lap mark. Now, this weekend, Colleague Racing's teammates Jeb Burton will start on the pole, and Justin Haley will join him on the front row. Starting lineup for the weekend was based on the metric qualifying from the previous race. Gregson will start third, Cindric fourth, and Allgaier will round out the top five. There are 40 cars in the field, 28 Chevrolets, 3 Fords, and 9 Toyotas. Chad Fincham in the number 13 is the only car that says did not qualify. That's an unfair statement. I was not able to make the race due to the metrics.
Yes, correct. Okay, so I know we're a little ahead, but we're going to go ahead and move on to the NASCAR Cup Series, also racing at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. They'll be racing the Foxwood Resort, the Casino 301, on Sunday, July 18th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, NBC Sports Network will have the pre-race coverage at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time, along with radio coverage on PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. Their distance is 318.46 miles over 301 laps. Stage 1 ends on lap 75, stage 2 on lap 85, making that a, 85 lap. No, that's not right. My math is way off here. It makes it a 110 lap event. Then the final stage ends on lap 301. So with that, Jay, let's go ahead and get into the Cup Series.
All right, we talked about this a little bit the other night. Larson extends his contract with Hendrick Motorsports through 2023. It's Hendrick Automotive Group, via its HendrickCars.com brand, will become the 35-race majority sponsor of Kyle Larson and the number 5 Chevrolet Camaro ZL1 team in both the 2022 and 2023 NASCAR Cup Series seasons. In addition, Hendrick Motorsports has extended the driver's contract for 1 year through 2023. Part of the agreement, HendrickCars.com will also sponsor Larson in all non-NASCAR events in which he competes, including branding on the driver's helmets, gloves, and fire suits. And the 28-year-old native out of Elk Grove, California, is a prolific dirt racer who's won 56 times since January of 2020 in a variety of cars and series outside of NASCAR. In addition to Larson, HendrickCars.com is the primary sponsor of a 4-time NHRA champion, Greg Anderson. Now, Kyle Larson is currently leading the NASCAR Cup Series in wins this season with 4 victories. So good pairing we're going to see long-term for the future.
Okay, now cruising for a cause. Fans in search of the ultimate thrill will have the opportunity to experience the Magic Mile from the driver's perspective as part of the Speedway Children's Charities Laps for Charity event. For just $40 donation to the New Hampshire chapter of the Speedway Children's Charities, fans can drive 3 laps in their personal vehicle or ride in the NHMS pace car on Thursday before NASCAR's best try to tame the track at Sunday's Foxwood Resort Casino 301. For more information, you can visit NHMS.com.
All right, for this weekend, it's going to be New England Patriots wide receiver Gunnar Olszewski. There we go, Olszewski, to drive the pace car. It'll be Sunday, July 18th, Gunnar Olszewski's all-pro punt returner and wide receiver for the New England Patriots will trade the pigskin for the keys to the official Toyota Camry TRD pace car as he leads 40 of NASCAR's best to the green flag for the Foxwood Resort Casino 301 and to the 50th NASCAR Cup Series race at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Born in Alvin, Texas, 6-foot Olszewski will enter his third season with the New England Patriots this year. And Patriots safety Patrick Chung in July of 2018, offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels, July 2017, and offensive tackle Matt Light, September 2016, linebacker Rob Ninkovich, July of 15, and wide receiver Julian Edelman in July of 14. They've all served as pace car drivers, making Olszewski the 6th member of the New England Patriots to get behind the wheel of that official Toyota Camry pace car at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Other notable pace car drivers have included Boston Bruins forward Chris Wagner in July of 2019, Richard Rawlings of Discovery Channel's Fast and Loud did it in September 2017, Dave Matthews Band bassist Stefan Lessard in July of 16, an Olympic triathlete Sarah True was the driver in September 2015, and then Boston Bruins legend Brad Park was a pace car driver in September of 2014.
Okay, now we'll take a look at NASCAR's history in New England. Among the 6 states that make up New England in the United States, Maine, Massachusetts, Vermont, Rhode Island, Connecticut, and New Hampshire, the NASCAR Cup Series has competed at tracks in 4 of them. The first NASCAR Cup Series race held in New England states was at Thompson Speedway, now known as Thompson Speedway Motorsports Park, the oval located in Thompson, Connecticut, and that race was on October the 12th of 1951. The first race was actually won by Neil Cole, driving a 1950 Oldsmobile, and it was Cole's lone career win in the series. A total of 102 NASCAR National Series races have been held in the state of New Hampshire, all at New Hampshire Motor Speedway, the most of any of the tracks in the New England states. So tracks in New Hampshire, the track name New Hampshire Motor Speedway, the city Loudoun, 49 cup races, 33 Xfinity, and 20 truck races. Combined, that's 102 races since their first year of 1990. Tracks in Connecticut, Thompson Speedway, City of Thompson, Connecticut. They've had 3 Cup Series wins in their first year, or 3 Cup Series races, I should say. Their first year was 1951. Tracks in Maine, the track name Oxford Plains Speedway in the city of Oxford, Maine. 3 Cup Series races, 5 Xfinity for a combined 8 races since 1966. Norwood Arena in the city of Norwood, Massachusetts. That's 1 Cup Series win, race since 1961. So here you have it for a little bit of New England history and NASCAR.
Definitely some history there. That goes back further than I do. Now, if you can believe this, last season's win leaders, Harvick and Hamlin, head to New Hampshire, still winless in 2021. NASCAR, or last season's NASCAR Cup Series winningest drivers, Kevin Harvick, and Denny Hamlin, head into this weekend at New Hampshire Motor Speedway, riding long winless streaks that they are hoping to snap. Harvick is coming off. Mine now has whatever Sharon has. My notes just shut down.
Okay, where did? Let me see if I can figure out where
okay.
you left off.
No, I got it back. Both
okay.
Kevin Harvick and Denny Hamlin head into the weekend at New Hampshire Motor Speedway riding a long winless streaks that they're hoping to snap. Harvick is coming off a career year in wins in NASCAR Cup Series, putting up 9 victories in 2020, but this season hasn't been able to capture a checkered flag. Harvick's winless streak has now reached 28 races, dating back to Bristol Motor Speedway on September 19th of 2020. And despite the slow start to the season, Harvick should carry some optimism with him into this weekend as he leads all active cup drivers almost every traditional statistical category when it comes to New Hampshire Motor Speedway. In 37 starts on the 1.058 mile track, he has posted 4 wins, coming in 2006, 2016, 2018, and then 2019, 13 top fives, and 21 top tens. He finished 5th in the event last season. On the other side, Joe Gibbs Racing's Denny Hamlin. He currently holds the points lead standing over Hendrick Motorsports' Kyle Larson by now a mere 10 markers after Atlanta. As Hamlin looks to hold on to that coveted points lead, he's also searching for his first win of the 2021 season, and much like Harvick, his streak dates back to last year at Talladega Super Speedway, October 4th, 2020, which was 26 races ago. Hamlin should also feel positive about his chances this weekend at New Hampshire, though. In 27 starts, he has put up 3 wins. His came in 2007, 12, and 17. Got a total of 11 top fives and 16 top tens. Plus, he finished runner-up in the last 2 races at the 1.058-mile facility. Another feather in Hamlin's cap this weekend is Joe Gibbs Racing leads the series in wins at New Hampshire in the NASCAR Cup Series with a total of 11 victories. Tony Stewart has a pair in 2000 and 2005. Mentioned Denny Hamlin's 3. Joey Logano was with JGR at that time in 2009. Matt Kenseth did it in 2013, 15, and 16, and then Kyle Busch in 2015 and 17.
Okay, another driver to keep your eye on this weekend is Brad Keselowski because he's looking for back-to-back wins at New Hampshire for Team Penske. 4 drivers have posted consecutive wins at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. They include Jimmy Johnson, had a 2003 sweep, Kurt Busch had a 2004 sweep, and Matt Kenseth, 2015 in the fall and 2016 in the spring, and Kevin Harvick, 2018 and 19. Now, this weekend, Team Penske's Brad Keselowski is looking to become the 5th different driver to win consecutive NASCAR Cup Series races at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. If he accomplishes the feat this weekend, it would be just the 2nd time in Brad Keselowski's career that he's won back-to-back races at the same track, joining Bristol Motor Speedway, in which he won in August 27th of 2011 and March 18th of 2012. Now, last season, Keselowski took home the trophy at New Hampshire after putting on a dominant performance, leading 184 of the scheduled 301 laps. Now, this season, standings, and he secured his spot in the playoff on wins. In 21 starts this year, he posted 1 win at Talladega, 6 top fives, and 8 top 10 finishes. The Michigan native has also made 20 starts at New Hampshire, posting 2 wins in 14 and 20, and 8 top fives, along with 13 top 10 finishes.
Next, we're going to look at the playoff bubble here. We got five races remaining in the regular season for the Cup Series. Now, Chip Ganassi Racing's Kurt Busch not only grabbed his first win of the season last weekend, but now also secured himself a spot in the playoffs with that victory leapfrogging several winless drivers in the postseason outlook standings. With chances to win starting to run out, tensions are going to start rising for those outside the playoff cut line without a win. We'll look at the drivers without a win first here that are vying for a playoff spot. Mentioned Denny Hamlin. He is the points leader, but in the playoff rankings, he's currently 13th. He doesn't have any race wins, but does have five stage wins and has 369 points from the cut line. Then you go to Kevin Harvick. He's at 626 points. Doesn't have any stage wins or playoff points. He's only 159 points to the good. Austin Dillon got zeros on the stage wins, 104 points up. Tyler Reddick has one stage win for a playoff point, is 96 points to the good. And that is the cut line right now at Buescher. The first one on the outside looking in is back those 96 points. Does have one stage win, one playoff point. Matt DiBenedetto, same stat line, but he's 138 points back. Ross Chastain, 145 back. Bubba Wallace is right behind him at 148 back. And we get into the 21st on back. Ricky Stenhouse is minus 161. Daniel Suarez, minus 179. Chase Briscoe, rookie this year, is back 196. Ryan Preece and Eric Jones are 221 out. Ryan Newman, 222. Eric Almirola is at 232 to the negative. Cole Custer, minus 249. Corey LaJoy at minus 308. And Anthony Alfredo at minus 346, another rookie. Those are the top 30 in points. Again, in the Cup Series, you got to be in the top 30 in points. Now, Richard Childress Racing's Austin Dillon and Tyler Reddick, 15th and 16th in the last two spots inside the playoff cut line. And rest assured, it will be difficult to catch them on points with five races to go. Should worry them is if the series sees another new winner or two that is below them in the driver's standings, as they could be bounced out of the playoffs. Currently, Reddick is in that last postseason transfer spot at plus 96 above Roush Fenway Racing's Chris Buescher. Of the drivers below the playoff cut line, Roush Fenway Racing's Ryan Newman has achieved the most success at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Newman is tied with Denny Hamlin, Kyle Busch, and Kurt Busch for the second most wins at the 1.058-mile track with three each. In total, Newman has made 35 series starts at New Hampshire, posting a series-leading seven poles. His three wins came in 2002, 5, and 11. He's got seven top fives and 20 top tens, which is second only to Harvick. Plus, don't forget, New Hampshire has been home to first-time winners in the series. Five NASCAR Cup Series drivers posted their first career win at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. June 28th, 2009, it was Joey Logano. September 16th, 2007, it was Clint Bowyer. September 15th, that was my birthday, 2002, that was Ryan Newman. Friday, November 23rd, I remember that, 2001, that was Robbie Gordon. And September 19th in 1999, it was front row Joe Nemechek. So still possible we could see it yet in these five races that somebody else from below the cut line wins.
Okay, we're going to run real tight here. I'm not sure that we're going to get both of these in, but Clint scenarios for the Granite State, which is five races remaining in the regular season in the NASCAR Cup Series, time is running thin for drivers to ensure their spot in the playoffs. Now, grazing ahead to New Hampshire Motor Speedway, five drivers have already clinched their spot on wins and points with several others having the opportunity to do the same this weekend. The drivers that have clinched their spot in the 16-driver postseason field include Kyle Larson, Kyle Busch, Chase Elliott, Martin Truex Jr., and Alex Bowman. Now, the next set of drivers that can clinch if they build up enough points to ensure that they will not be left out of the playoffs due to not all winning drivers having a slot available. William Byron could clinch with 15 points, Joey Logano with 48. Ryan Blaney can only clinch with help, as is the case for Brad Keselowski. Now, these drivers can clinch with a win. That includes William Byron, Joey Logano, Ryan Blaney, Brad Keselowski. Kurt Busch actually got a win already. Christopher Bell, Michael McDowell, and Denny Hamlin. So some of those drivers already have a win, so that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, Jay.
Yeah, it looks like they forgot to update it following last week.
Yeah, that's not making sense to me because some of those, Brad Keselowski already has a win. Some of those drivers already have wins. Now, just active race winners, let's cover that for this New Hampshire segment, Jay.
All right, there's been 49 NASCAR Cup Series races held at New Hampshire Motor Speedway.
No. We're short on time, yeah. So just go to active race winners.
Okay. Looking down at the list, we've mentioned Kevin Harvick has four. Denny Hamlin has Kurt Busch and Kyle Busch also each with three, as well as Ryan Newman. And then Joey Logano has a pair, as well as Brad Keselowski. A couple of former drivers, Jeff Burton and Stuart Haas's race is Kevin Harvick, but he's active. Jeff Burton also has four, but is not an active driver.
Okay. So, yeah, he won in 97, 98, 99, and 2000. He's a TV analyst now. Kevin Harvick in 2006, 16, 18, and 19, they lead the NASCAR Cup Series and wins at New Hampshire Motor Speedway with four victories. And Team Penske's Brad Keselowski is the most recent Cup winner, taking home the trophy last season after that dominating performance of leading 184 of the scheduled 301 laps. So that pretty much closes it out, I guess, for our preview of this weekend of racing. And up next will be our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off right here. And joining us, let's see if I can get over to the studio. For some reason, my computer is really giving me a hard time here. So who's your...
I know
you. Oh, have you made your pick yet, Jay?
I did put it up on the board. Again, we haven't heard from Andy, but we'll just assume based on history that he's going to go with Chase Briscoe. And you just mentioned it. I am going to go with Brad Keselowski for a lot of reasons, and one of them we'll talk about here in Hot Top. I think he might have something to prove here yet before the end of the season.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is the top of the hour. Joining us shortly will be Tommy Kraft, and he'll help us with our NASCAR Hot Topics tonight. So I hope he's able to call in. He said there he is. We'll bring him into the queue now, and we'll go ahead and get started with our NASCAR Hot Topics Sound Off. Welcome to the show, Tommy.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure as always, and we're going to have you go ahead and kick off our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off tonight.
Let's go ahead with the big news of the day of Cindric to the 2, Harrison Burton to the 21, I guess Brad to Roush, and DiBenedetto being a free agent.
Okay, that was pretty big news today, Jay. What are your thoughts?
Well, we don't know officially yet still that Brad is going to Roush Fenway Racing, but That has not been officially announced. Well, Roger Penske kind of let it slip there in his interview that we know that's where he's going. I realize that they haven't announced it officially yet, like you mentioned. Let's start with Austin Cindric into the number two. That didn't surprise me. There are a lot of different ways this could have gone down. I do think that he's got the talent. And they want to put him in that flagship car, if you want to call that the flagship car at this point. Being that that's the seat that was going to be emptied, it made the most sense to me. I know that wasn't originally what was announced. Now, with that, some other things blew my mind. I really can't even wrap my head around it yet at this point, but Harrison Burton announced as driver of the number 21 Wood Brothers Ford, which is has an alliance with Team Penske. That one, listened to a bunch on SiriusXM radio today. I understand everybody's thought process. Just an absolute shock, though. They compared, looking at Hendrick Motorsports, that youth movement, I believe Hendrick Motorsports driver lineup is at like 25 point something, and now Penske's is at 26 point something. So that seemed to be the direction they wanted to go. It's very unfortunate when we talk about musical chairs or race cars, butts up in the air. Matt DiBenedetto is the one that's left out in the cold, and it's very, very unfortunate for him. I think he deserved the chance. If you get a chance, listen to his interview as well as Team Penske's, though. There's some understanding there of maybe why it happened. They've kind of been on a downslide. They have turned the corner, but as Matt said it himself, it might have been a little bit too little too late.
Okay. Yeah, I heard the news first thing this morning, and you're right. It wasn't a surprise of Austin Cindric going to the two in some respects, although we knew and Matt DiBenedetto was going to be out of the 21 at the end of the 2021 season. And I think a lot of people thought for a long time that he was going to end up at Penske, either in a fourth car. And I still think that that's possible, or that, you know, something would open up for him. But it's sounding less and less like that after listening to his video presentation this morning and then listening to the interviews this today from Team Penske as well as from the Wood Brothers. As far as Harrison Burton going to the 21 car, there was some explanation there as well. They felt generation car. They felt that Harrison Burton was coming in at a prime time to start with their organization, and they were looking for a youth driver to put into that position, somebody that they can kind of build their organization around. And Harrison Burton fits that bill. So he doesn't have any old car hang-ups, if you will, to kind of work around, and so he can come in and start out with this next-gen car, and they can build on that. I think along with that, it kind of reflects kind of what has been happening at Toyota for some time now. When they feel that they've got a hot shoe or somebody who's doing really, really well, Toyota has no qualms about opening up the space to put that hot shoe into position for a full-time ride. And I think that's what's happened here as well. For Harrison Burton, this is a move from Toyota into the Ford camp. And so he is no longer part of the Toyota Driver Development Program. They took him, I guess, as far as they felt that they could go with him. And I think all of the resources are now going to Ty Gibbs. So it's unfortunate, but that's kind of the pathway that Toyota has developed. And for Wood Brothers Racing, I think this is probably going to be a good thing. Austin Cindric going into the two. Again, not a big surprise. It hasn't been officially announced, but it's been leaked that Brad Keselowski will end up at Roush Fenway Racing in a co-owner position while perhaps driving. We don't know for sure, but perhaps driving for Roush Fenway. So we'll have to wait and get that news as it comes out. I think it is surprising that Team Penske would go ahead and make that announcement and the Wood Brothers would go ahead with their announcement, knowing that Roush Fenway hasn't made an official announcement yet. And you got to wonder if we're going to get an official announcement from Roush Fenway Racing since these guys have already made their announcement. To me, it's a little bit of a, I don't want to say a slap in the face, but a little bit of a, whatever you want to call it, to Roush Fenway Racing for letting that news leak and then not backing it up with a formal announcement. So I'm not sure what's going on there, but it's very interesting that these guys would be making their announcements without the Roush Fenway announcement coming first. So I think it's all interesting. I think it's all good. The only person that gets the raw deal here is Matt DiBenedetto. But let's be honest, Matt DiBenedetto has known for a year that he is going to be out of that number 21 Wood Brothers Ford. So he had more than a year to look for another opportunity. And now he's once again behind the eight ball. And I think he admitted as much on his video. He said that he knew that they were not performing up to par and was giving it too little too late. Well, I think the same is true as far as him looking for another opportunity. He should have been looking for another opportunity long before now. I think he had his hopes on something happening at Team Penske, but I think it's become obvious that that's not going to be the case. So it is going to be interesting to see what happens here and when that next announcement is going to be coming. So, Tommy, I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Well, we kind of already knew that Cindric was going to go to the two. I think we had discussed that as a possibility on previous podcasts. So I wasn't very surprised to hear that. But Harrison Burton going to the 21 and Matty D being out of the ride, I would say, is the shocker of the day. And once again, Matty D is kind of a, well, kind of like you said, he did know he was going to be out of that ride either way, whether it be Cindric, but now it's actually Harrison Burton. But, I mean, there's still some options out there. I read Bob Pycrass's article right before, and it said that, you know, he could still go to Calling, GMS, 23XI still out there, Trackhouse. However, Bob Pycrass did kind of point out that if Kurt Busch stays with, if Kurt Busch goes to 23XI, then Ross Chastain will probably stay at Trackhouse. So then Matty D would be out of those options. But I said it in the group message today, but I really think that he should not close the door on going to the extended of your trucks because it, I mean, look at John Hunter Nemechek. I mean, he's dominating in trucks right now and he's probably going to get a good ride in either the Xfinity or Cup next year. I mean, he could still be an option for Toyota, in my opinion, for the 23XI car. It's just crazy. And then Brad's going to be, I mean, not confirmed yet, but basically Roush as a co-owner. So that's really cool, or ownership, I should say. But, yeah, once again, I'm excited to see what happens to Matty D. I mean, he's a fan favorite, so I'm hoping he does get a full-time cup ride. But I'd also like to see him dominate in the Xfinity Series. I mean, the Xfinity Series is losing people, so why not replace him with a cup guy? So, you know, plus Kyle Busch is done now, so they need competition out there.
Okay, Jay.
Well, it put DiBenedetto in it. I'll start there. He knows he's capable of. He has proved it. Again, the situation just didn't quite develop. And this is where I hate it for him, but he said it himself. They weren't quite, I don't think how he said it. The program was broke, and he didn't, as a driver, really voice his opinion and demand changes until recently. And since those changes have taken place, we've seen some improvement again. He went from making the playoffs last year to being possibly not making it this year. So you consider that kind of a backward trend, or at least not improvement like we thought we would see. So I think he's aware of that. The not being in that ride, yeah, he originally knew Cindric was coming in, but with the seat of the number two opening, I think he maybe felt like he was going to be able to slide over there. It would be really interesting to get all the information and details, and I understand certain things of why they have not released more information now. Roger Penske mentioned that I think as far back as last year when Brad signed the one-year contract, that he really was looking to be involved in ownership. And Penske said they just couldn't provide that for him. So I'm thinking that maybe already as far back as last year when Brad only signed a one-year deal, if we remember we discussed why he only signed a one-year deal, that right. Brad Keselowski was giving him that option of, hey, I'm only going to give you one more year. If you can't bring me into management, I'm going to go elsewhere. So, like I said, it would be interesting to know exactly the full timeline and all the information that each party was made aware of. And I realize we aren't going to get that. It is a personal thing, and those negotiations were kept quiet. So, but it, really interesting to hear. And we mentioned Matt DiBenedetto not knowing for sure if he was going to get that ride. That apparent decision apparently wasn't made because Harrison Burton said it was pretty much a shock to him. Even when he met with the Wood brothers, he wasn't real sure of how everything was going to play out. He was just being given the opportunity to talk to them. So I did listen to his interview this morning on the morning drive that, you know, it was kind of a shock to him. So I'm sure Matt was still holding on to that hope that he had had his foot in the door and could at least possibly stay there. Now, Sharon, you mentioned a fourth full-time Penske ride. I would love to see it because I do feel he deserves it, and I know that the rides aren't as available now as what they were. So we'll have to wait and see. I know there's still a couple of spots, but that also then puts it more pressure on some other drivers. Talk about now you got to put his name on the list for the possible 2311 expansion, the Trackhouse one. We think Chastain has the upper leg there. Well, DiBenedetto is now officially a free agent, and then mix in Kurt Busch. And of those, Kurt Busch is a winner, as he just won this past weekend. So you'd think that kind of gives him the edge, unless these teams also want to look at younger and youth movement and preparing for the future, which then you give the edge to either Ross Chastain or DiBenedetto.
Yeah, those are all really good points. And yeah, although Matt DiBenedetto knew a year ago, you guys are right. I think he kind of fell into a comfort zone, if you will, thinking that even with the leaked news of Brad Keselowski leaving, I think he thought maybe Cindric would go to the two, or he could go to the two. Now that he knows Cindric's in the two, he had hopes of being in the 21 for another year. But, of course, with the announcement of Harrison Burton, that ended. Now, he knew about all of this. He heard this news yesterday. So he had to hang on to his hat, if you will, until everything was made official this morning with the announcement. And then he did come out with a video. If you've not seen it yet, I would encourage you to listen. It's on Facebook. I'm not sure if it's on Twitter, but I know it's on Facebook on his page if you want to hear what he has to say. And then also the interviews that took place today, both with Team Penske and Austin Cindric, along with the Wood brothers and Harrison Burton. I think that those interviews, as well as what Matt had to say, do shed some light on a little bit of what was happening behind the scenes. Jay, you mentioned that Harrison Burton was pretty surprised himself that he was given that opportunity. But I think behind that is probably some conversation about, you know, what was happening with the Toyota development and where are we going to put Ty Gibbs for next year. So I think he probably knew that he was going to be out at Toyota anyway and, you know, was already talking to other organizations, but hadn't really known what was going to end up happening until they made the announcement. So it's an interesting scenario. There's more dominoes to fall, as you guys have pointed out. I can't wait to see what happens next. So, Tommy, your final thoughts here.
I saw on Twitter where Jeff Burton kind of recommended Harrison Burton to the Wood Brothers, I believe. I don't remember where I saw that at on Twitter, who tweeted it. I mean, it could have been Reddit or something, so it might not have been true, but I did see that on Twitter, and I thought that was interesting, so I did want to add that to it. But I'm just excited to see where Matty D lands. It's kind of cool to see a rookie back in the two car. Sad to see, I guess, Brad leave the two Miller Lite car behind, but it was time, I guess, to see a rookie in that car for Roger Penske to have a rookie. So excited for that. And Bob Pockrass pointed out that, because somebody said on Twitter or whatever, you know, why didn't they put Blaney or Logano in the two or something like that? And then Bob Pockrass said, well, you know, he's got 12 Xfinity wins. He's leading the Cup points right now, I think. Or the Xfinity points, and he's a champion. So he's pretty valid for the two car. And hope it works out. And Harrison Burton to the 21 is awesome, another rookie. And I've been wondering who's going to compete for rookie with Cindric, because he was the only one I believe announced. And now Haley's going to be full-time. So there's three younger guys moving up, I guess you could say. And just want to see where Matty D lands. I really would like to see him go to the Xfinity Series. Oh, and I saw this on Twitter today, too, that I thought was interesting. Once again, I was Reddit, so take it for, you know, what it is. But it said that it just goes back to what you were talking about, is Harrison Burton leaving Joe Gibbs. John Hunter Nemechek and Ty Gibbs and Daniel Hemric is what I saw was going to be the lineup for Joe Gibbs next year, or somebody's prediction or something like that. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, we had talked about them downsizing to three, so I was interested to see those names pop up. But, I mean, Harrison Burton's gone, so, I mean, and John Hunter Nemechek's in Toyota, I mean, but he could move up to that 23XI car, or they could get up to Kurt Busch. Where does Matty D go? I don't know. I mean, if John Hunter Nemechek goes up, then maybe that's the ride of Joe Gibbs for Matty D. He's still a Ford. Maybe he can go to Stuart Haas in the 98 car. He's finished the Xfinity Series. I mean, there's a bunch of options out there, I think, for him.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so let's go ahead and go to the next hot topic. Jay, do you want to get us started?
Well, Sharon, I know you and I wanted to talk about this. We got to go back from a missed one from Monday night, which goes back to Friday night ARCA Menard Series race at Elko Speedway. bump and run, shove to win, however you want to look at it. We had some contact, apparently more than once, between Corey Heim and Ty Gibbs. Heim coming out the better of it, getting the final bump and going on to the wins.
Okay, Tommy, did you get a chance to see that race?
I did not, but I saw on Twitter what Ty Gibbs and Corey Heim, I mean, they were kind of going at it and their teammates, so I thought that was kind of entertaining, but I did not see it, but I did hear there was an entertaining finish, and then, of course, there was the fireworks on Twitter afterwards between teammates, but, I mean, that just – if you move somebody out of the way, I guess, you know, I don't know how to phrase it, dirty racing or whatever, maybe you want it more. I don't know. I don't know how to phrase that, but I like it. And, I mean, Dale Earnhardt certainly did it. Terry Labonte just wants to rattle the people's cage.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. The competition in this series is really between those two drivers, and they are within 7 points of each other right now. Now, Corey Iam has said that he did it in revenge, and he was that honest about it based on the way that Ty Gibbs was racing him earlier in the race. He gave him back a bit of his own medicine, I guess. So that's how that all came about. And Ty Gibbs didn't seem to have any problem with it after the race. He kind of went, if you will, and didn't have anything negative to say about it. So I think he understands that if you race people that way, you got to expect people to come back and race you that way as well. Well, now the door is wide open. Now they're going to Berlin Raceway this weekend. And I'll tell you what, this is going to be an interesting race, as Jay and I have talked about earlier on the preview show, because these guys could end up taking each other out, which could possibly open the door for some of the drivers that are sitting in third or fourth place. So I can't wait to see what happens at Berlin Raceway this weekend. But these guys are serious competitors. I don't think either one of them like to lose. I think they're out there to win, and they are not really happy unless they can get that win. So, and yes, they're teammates. That's what makes this even more interesting, is that they're competing for the same team, and yet they are trash-talking each other. Not really trash-talking. I shouldn't say that. Corey Iam did say he was looking for revenge because of the way he was being driven by Ty Gibbs earlier in the race. But Ty Gibbs didn't really trash talk back. He took the high road on all of that. And now maybe not on Twitter, but he took the high road, at least on the post-race interview. And I think it's going to be interesting because these guys are both going to be looking for revenge. I think even Corey Iam's going to be looking to maintain what he has going with that 7-point lead. But Ty Gibbs wants to cut into that 7 points and go after the victory himself. I've got a feeling they're going to take each other out. What do you think, Jay?
Well, from what I saw, this is what I would call a great example of a bump and run. He did not wreck him. He gave him a nudge, moved him up that lane.
Yep.
He was able to get by. Unfortunately, it did cost him two or three more positions. Now, when you get into the, you know, as we talk about it, whether or not this is going to continue, you know, it really makes me wonder if Gibbs said, hey, you're right, I did rough him up a little bit early in the race. Maybe I did deserve it. Or he's just saying, hey, you know, we'll see what comes around next time, who's in what position. We'll have to wait and see how mm-hmm. that plays out on the track. You know, I go back to, and I know, Sharon, you and I, over the 3 years I've been here with Fan for Racing, blog and radio with you, we have a little bit difference of opinion on this. That is an example. I felt like that was an okay bump and run. You go back to, I think, of some of the feuds we've seen, Carl Edwards and Brad Keselowski, and Denny Hamlin was involved in one of them, where you're going down the straightaway at Atlanta and you see Hans turn hard to the right and put somebody in the wall. I was at the race at Martinsville where Denny Hamlin drove up underneath Chase Elliott. Elliott couldn't make the turn because his rear end was up in the air. Okay, that is not a bump and run, and I don't agree with that. That is taking somebody out. There's a fine line. And I think that Corey Iam did a good job with it. He had the car. He drove in there a little deeper, just gave him that nudge, and then turned and drove under him. He didn't run him up into the wall to take him out of the race. So I was okay with that. Now, if next week Ty Gibbs returns that, you know, then Corey has to be the one to take the high road and say, all right, you know, we're back to tit for tat.
Okay, Tommy, anything more you want to say?
I was just going to add, I do remember seeing Corey Iam actually racing the trucks at Darlington. I think that might have been his debut. And if I remember, he may have been leading at one point, but I do remember him running in the top 5 or 10, I think. I don't remember where he finished, but he was doing pretty good. So I agree with what you said about they're probably going to be competing for a championship at the end and take each other out. That definitely might happen, but I mean – teammate competition is a good thing, but I do think that they were subtweeting at each other a little bit after the race. Like I said, I didn't really see the race. I just heard that Corey rattled Ty's cage, I guess.
Well, okay. Yeah, you guys, you bring up a good point, because I definitely have always been one of those fans that really want to see the drivers use their skill on the track. And you're right, Corey Heim did not just knock him into the wall and blatantly cause an accident, but he did intentionally nudge him up a little bit, and he did lose a couple of positions. And to some degree, it takes some skill to be able to make that happen and not wreck the driver. But still, I would like to see the drivers be able to pass each other. And it's just tough to do on a short track. I mean, we're talking about a track that's less than a half mile in length with Berlin Raceway. And I just think that these guys are really going to be bumping and banging all day long in that ARCA race this weekend. And keep in mind, it's not just the ARCA Menards Series points that are on the line. It's the Sioux Chief Showdown points as well. Corey Heim leads in the Menards Series, ARCA Menards Series, but it's Ty Gibbs who leads in that Sioux Chief Showdown. So either way, hopefully they'll race each other with enough respect that it's not going to be an all-out, just knock them out of the race kind of thing that happens. But I've just got a bad feeling that these guys are going to be going after each other, and at the final result, intentional or not, the final result could be that they take each other out and open the door for those third and fourth place drivers. So let's hope I'm wrong. Let's hope that these guys take the high road and race each other with some dignity and respect, and that we don't see that. I just think it's not likely on the short track of Berlin Raceway. I think these guys are going to be at it all night long. So, Jay, your final thoughts.
Well, Sharon, I'll extend you an invitation if you'd like to interrupt me based on what time it is.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. We are coming up at the 10:30 mark, and for our new listeners, we'll always do an announcement at this time of the night to let you know that we are going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, but we will continue our conversation beyond that mark as part of our bonus overtime material on our podcast. So when we go off the air, just know that I will go out on Twitter as soon as our conversation is over here and let you know that the podcast is available. And then you can go to the podcast player either at Blog Talk Radio or at fanforracing.com. Just fast forward to the two-hour mark, and you can hear the rest of our Hot Topic conversation as part of that bonus overtime material. So we just want to make sure you know how you can hear the rest of the conversation when we go off the air at 10:30 p.m. sharp. So with that, Jay, go ahead and give us your thoughts.
I think you made a good point of certain tracks, especially if it's a one-lane short track, that I don't want to say it's acceptable, but sometimes it's kind of necessary. We've heard it. I'm trying to think of the specific driver from the previous generation. You got three bumps. The first bump was to, hey, let you know I'm faster than you. I'm here. I'm faster than you. Second bump is, hey, I'm getting tired of being behind you. Third one is I'm coming through. You know, kind of a courtesy bump, if you will, just to let them know. And I've seen it, you know, and I think, Sharon, and this is one I know where you and I had this discussion of between Joey Logano and Martin Truex back at Martinsville. Again, you got to go back to a short track. Martin worked several laps to get by Joey and did it without bumping him. Joey, on the other hand, I think it was the first corner he had the opportunity, gave a bump. You know, and that's just the difference between drivers. We know Mark Martin is one that I don't know that I ever saw him give a bump. If that meant he finished second or whatever, that he didn't do it. And so there are certain drivers that will not do it. You know, competitive or not, you can't say Mark Martin wasn't a competitive driver. That was just his style. And then you have the higher range of somebody that runs over somebody just because they can't. You know, I hate to put that on Dale Earnhardt, but he was kind of known for it. I mean, that he had no problems nudging you, bumping you, or running over you, whichever the case may be. That was his style. I'm okay with it. Again, I don't want to see it every week. I'm with Sharon. You know, you want to see a clean pass, but sometimes that's, especially on your short tracks and road courses, I would say, you look at road courses on particular corners, outbreaking them and getting that advantage and giving that little nudge just to get them out of the lane, and then you drive by them. So I'm okay with that, but I don't like to see it become the norm or over-aggressive of just because I'm faster, I'm going to run you over.
Yeah, those are good points, Jay. Okay, Tommy, you get to bring up the next one.
Let's go with the Nashville Fairgrounds track or NASCAR going there being delayed or the decision being delayed.
Okay. Jay, have you been able to catch up with that one?
Yeah, I posted this, this has been, what, 3 years, 2 to 3 years in the making. I remember when we first talked about this one. I would love to see the NASCAR Cup Series and or Xfinity Series in Nashville at the fairgrounds. I know that NASCAR is trying real hard to bring their presence into that marketing area, but it just seems to me like they're fighting against the being unwanted. And there are tracks such as Iowa or other places that want a cup race that can't get it. Of why they're trying to force their way into an area that evidently is not 100% behind it, put it that way. One of the things I heard a little bit of talk about today, and I can't even possibly begin to repeat some of the stuff that was said on Sirius XM radio, of that they'll come to an agreement if they put mufflers on the car. And, yeah, I'm not in favor of adjusting what the sport brings just to appease the community. If you don't want NASCAR there, then take it somewhere else. You know, again, mm-hmm. I would love to see it. I think it would be a great facility to host a race. I've been there for some of the super late model races. Great facility, and I think could put on a great show. But if they're not wanted there, you know, at some point you got to quit banging on that wall.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think that's what it is. Now, let's keep in mind the deadline for a decision was July 31st, and they say that they're likely to get an extension should they ask for one. And the reason that was the deadline is so that they could prepare for the 2022 season. So the more they go beyond that deadline, the less likely that we would see Nashville Fairgrounds on the docket for the 2022 season, and the more likely it is that it's going to be pushed into the 2023 season, if at all. But you're right. There was a study done. Community organization Stand Up Nashville presented results of its neighborhood two-mile radius survey on proposed Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway expansion operation by Speedway Motorsports. More than 500 residents responded. They also knocked down 1,000-plus doors. And the results of that survey say the majority of residents surveyed do not approve of the racetrack expansion as it is. So if we don't have community support, why be somewhere where you're not wanted? Why push the issue there? So I have to agree with Jay with that. Let's not push the issue. If they don't want us there, let's move on and find a location where they do want us, and we'll embrace the NASCAR tradition of our racing. So I'm with you on that one. It appears to me that these guys don't really want us there in the neighborhood. So let's just move on is my way of thinking. Don't worry about asking for an extension. I know NASCAR's put in a lot of time here. I know that they have. but if it's this much of an issue, and it's more than half of the respondents are saying that they're not in favor of the expansion as it currently stands, then I say let's move on. Tommy, your thoughts?
I was kind of sad looking at it. I mean, it's only going to be one race a year. I mean, I don't understand why it's that big of a deal. I mean, like I said, it's just most likely one weekend out of the year, an Xfinity and a Cup race on Saturday and a Sunday. I feel like it could be manageable. I mean, I understand the traffic. I saw that, and that makes more sense to me than the noise. I mean, I get that it would be loud, but it would only last a few hours, and then it would be over. What would be worse to me would be the traffic, because, I mean, I live in Raleigh, North Carolina, and it's pretty bad. Like, just to go down to the road to the gas station or McDonald's takes, like, 20 minutes, 30 minutes out of your day, and that's just to get food and just to deal with going through two stoplights, and you're only going, like, a quarter mile, so... That's what I would see would be the main issue, and that was what I saw. But I was just disappointed to see that. I mean, I'm hoping that the SRX, because I saw what Chase Elliott said on Twitter. He's like, you know, if you guys really want NASCAR to come back, we need your support this coming up Saturday. I'm really looking forward to that race. I get what you guys are saying. Don't push the issue, but they used to race there. If they're going to be involved in Nashville, I know they've got the race at Nashville Super Speedway now, but that's not in Nashville. That's actually in Lebanon. It's like outside the city. I mean, downtown Nashville would be ideal, and I feel like the fairgrounds is close to that. So I get why NASCAR is trying to push hard there, and I do want them to continue to try, but if it's going to be an uphill battle like it's already sounded like it's going to be, maybe move on. I mean, there's Rockingham and there's North Wilkesboro here in North Carolina. There's South Boston in Virginia. I mean, there's other options that you could bring back if you're going to go that route.
Okay, Jay.
Well, and here's the thing. When you talk about doing the survey in the surrounding community, Tommy mentioned it. It's one weekend. I think that's where NASCAR is still holding on and allowing this if they grant the extension, is leadership within the city government needs to make a decision based on the entire city. And, you know, when NASCAR comes in, it is not just about the fans there, because you're going to come in, fans are going to come in from possibly Columbus, Mississippi, for example. What it brings into the community as a whole, businesses, hotels, your restaurants. So, and a lot of sponsor then, whether it be at Walmart or Napa Auto Parts, if Chase Elliott were to make an appearance. So it's not just about the ones that live right directly around that. I understand they'd be frustrated for that one weekend out of the month or year. But what does the whole bring into the community and the city as a whole that would outweigh that of, especially for those couple thousand that are immediately around that area? That's what I think why there is still the desire, is hopefully that city government sees the bigger picture and doesn't worry. I don't want to say they shouldn't be concerned about all their constituents, but they need to make a decision based on the best for the entirety, not just the few. And I think we see some political figures that don't do that.
Okay, and that, I couldn't agree more with that. I hear what you're saying, and I do agree with you. I think they're not looking at the bigger picture. They're looking at their little part of the world and how is it going to affect them personally. And they've already said that the efforts that Bristol Motor Speedway put into place to kind of blunt the sound and the noise in their area were not strong enough. That's why they call it Thunder Valley. So I think they're just fearful that this is going to be a once-a-year Thunder Valley that's going to be created in Nashville. Now, I understand where NASCAR is coming from, too. Nashville is one of the hottest spots in the United States right now, and everybody wants to be a part of Nashville. So I understand where they're coming from. Now, on the positive side of this, it says the majority of the residents that they spoke just don't want to see the development, and there's no getting around that. But we did ask what measures could be taken to mitigate the harm it will cause to the community. And they asked, what benefits would you like to see? So it'll be interesting to see the results of that. But among the residents surveyed, not all were opposed to the track expansion. In fact, you had 55% said no, 34% actually said yes, and you had another 11% that were not sure. So it's important to note that these measures were not seen as additional needs beyond the current proposal, and many said, oh, yeah, I already said about the noise. So it's clear the process is not popular. Among the residents surveyed, not all were opposed to the track expansion, and some could be in support of it if only the community feedback could be taken into account. So in some cases here, they just want to make sure that the community feedback is taken into an account and that NASCAR can show, I guess, some indication of responding to what their needs are. But it does sound to me like there is some fear from that 55%. There isn't anything that they're going to be able to do that's going to change their mind. And that's where I guess I kind of come back and say, listen, if they don't want us, let's just move on. Yeah, NASCAR is a big market, or Nashville is a big market. And, yeah, I understand why we want to be there. And, yes, I'd love to see you push it a little bit more, but they're not going to like the fans when they're coming into town for those events. No matter how much money they're spending, those residents are not going to like it. So it may end up not being a good situation all the way around. They're not going to like the drivers. They're not going to like the people, the fans, and that is something that has to be taken into consideration. So not all of that report is available here. I've given you what we can see of that report. I'd love to see them go to Nashville Fairgrounds. I think the racing there has been fantastic. And you say it's just once a year. That's once a year for NASCAR. There's always the other races that take place there. But NASCAR is going to bring the biggest influx of people to the community. And, Jay, you're right. That's a positive for the community overall because of the dollars that are going to be spent. That could mean less taxes on those residents that are complaining, but they're not looking at it that way. So, Tommy, what are your thoughts?
I want NASCAR to keep on trying. You know, maybe not push too hard calls like you guys are saying. There are a lot of other options out there. And also, I did want to add, I said that Nashville Super Speedway was in Lebanon, Tennessee. I think that's actually pronounced differently. I don't think it's pronounced Lebanon. So, I mean, NASCAR used to race there. I would love to see them return. It sounds like it's going to be hard for that to happen currently, but maybe given time, things will change.
Yeah. Time will tell the rest of the story, right?
And maybe the SRX will help out this weekend.
Maybe. Oh, okay, Jay, what's our next topic?
Well, I was scrolling through there, and I didn't get this one posted up, and there's no link for it. It's just kind of an opinion thing. Kurt Busch picking up the victory this weekend and locking himself in. Well, we talked, and I shut it down, what the points gap was. The closest one to get in now on points, 100 and some points out with Chris Buescher. Do you think we're seeing the final 16 we're going to see in the playoffs from these next five races? Or do you see, especially with Daytona being that final race, one more surprise jump into the playoffs there with a victory?
Oh, good question. Tommy, what are your thoughts?
I definitely think that there's a chance that we see another driver win that complicates the playoffs even further. I mean, we might even get a few more. Well, there's Watkins Glen left. There's Daytona. So, I mean, maybe Matt DiBenedetto could still pull off a road course win. He seems pretty good at road courses. Then Daytona, I mean, really anything could happen at that track, seriously. I mean, Eric Jones won the shootout or Busch Clash or whatever it's called now. He won it, and the car was basically totaled. So, I mean, who knows what will happen there. I'm not really sure what the other races are. I haven't really looked at the schedule. There's New Hampshire, so maybe some drivers good at short tracks could come out and pull out. I know Matty D said that he was looking forward to this track, so maybe he can pull it off. So who knows? There's still hope for other drivers.
Okay, I agree. I think that there probably will be some other drivers that come from below the cut line to the top. And that's not good news for drivers like, let's see, well, Chris Buescher is already pushed out. The drivers without the wins that would be most vulnerable are Tyler Reddick and Austin Dillon, based on how many people below the cut line come up with a win in these next, I think it's five races that are left for the Cup Series. So, you know, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is definitely a possibility on Super Speedway. But there's other drivers too. Michael McDowell could have come up with his second victory and win on the Super Speedway. Matt DiBenedetto is great on the speedways. Bubba Wallace has had some really good speedway finishes. Yeah, there's plenty of drivers below that cut line that could come up with a win and put themselves on the other side in a positive position to be one of the 16 to compete for that championship. I hope we see the most competitive 16, and I know it's not always like that. There's always a group that we are pretty sure are going to be out in the first round. You know, we're going to see drivers like Denny Hamlin now starting at 13th in the standings, the playoff standings going in. And then that puts Kevin Harvick in 14th place, Austin Dillon and Tyler Reddick in 15th and 16th place. So, again, those two are the most vulnerable. Because with the possibility of two people below the cut line coming up with a win in these next five races. At least one. I think there's going to be at least one. And I also hope that of those four drivers that don't have a win yet, I am hopeful that at least one of them come up with a win in these next five races as well. But we're going to see a little bit of everything, I think, in these next five races, and it's going to be fun to watch. Jay?
Well, and obviously Daytona being that final spot, last chance, we know that one's a wild card. You mentioned Watkins Glen as a road course. I see that as kind of an open thing. But to me, the more interesting one is the unknown of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway road course this year. We've seen that with the Roval. But there again, even with that, Martin Truex, Chase Elliott, Ryan Blaney, a good road course, was the first winner on the Roval. We've seen you still got to be able to beat the best of the best. The other one in between there is Michigan. Now, that one, too, close to a super speedway. But we've seen certain teams specifically be able to really handle that track and dominate there. So I think it would be tough. The only one that, and I don't know that I want to say I want to see it, but really could be the monkey wrench if Stuart Haas Racing were to be able to pick up speed and continue on the kind of upward trend they've been on. Eric Almirola winning at Michigan, for example. A team that's, I think he's up to 27th in points now. He's a little further away from the 30th point cut line, but could possibly still, because we know He is one that both on the super speedways as well as Michigan has that talent. If they get that little bit of more speed, maybe in the right position, right pitch strategy, something like that could be in that kind of position to be the one that could come from all the way back. Now, you mentioned several that are right in that mid-pack of 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th. Bubba Wallace, Daniel Suarez is another one. We haven't seen them as strong as we've seen early in this season, but if they were to get back on track and get closer and be able to, I think they'd have to make a bold strategy move, or as Larry McReynolds said, you got to do something different when these teams, you're being beat by them, maybe even just by a little bit, if you're behind them, you got to do something different. So to see a pitch strategy call that puts them on a different cycle and works out in their favor, we could see any one of those teams do that and get that final spot.
Okay. Tommy, your follow-up?
I was definitely going to say you can't rule Stenhouse out at a super speedway. Or Bubba, really. I mean, he finished second in the Daytona 500 a few years ago, so I see him as a threat. Suarez looks good. I mean, he's been running up at the front. Chris Buescher had some runs earlier in the year. He's still in there. I think Austin Dillon's had good finishes at Michigan. Cole Custer won last year. We haven't seen him yet. Eric Jones has won at Daytona. I mean, there's a good chance that could happen. So I definitely think we might see. And then, like Jay said, the Indianapolis Motor Road Course this year. I want to add that Austin Cindric, he's been in at Road America and at COTA. He led some of the laps, and I thought he was actually going to win some of those races there at one point. So I wouldn't even rule him out if they put him in at Watkins Glen or Indianapolis as another surprise winner. I know he can't really do anything in the playoffs, but still, I mean, I couldn't count him out. Or AJ, Allmendinger, if they do him as well. So, but yeah, there's options out there for at least two or three other winners for sure.
Okay, yeah, I agree. I think that there are plenty of options for drivers that could get that victory and kind of make it a little more difficult for some of these other guys. You got to think, though, that Austin Dillon and Tyler Reddick are going to be racing hard to go after those wins themselves as well. So we'll see what happens here at New Hampshire this weekend. That's not one of the easier tracks for a lot of these guys. So it's going to be interesting to see. Somebody like a Tyler Reddick or an Austin Dillon could come up with a win there. But those guys are going to be fighting as hard as those other bubble drivers because they know that if one of these other drivers do come up with a victory, it's them that's going to be kicked out. So I think we're going to see really hard racing in these next five events, and it's going to be entertaining for the fans. Jay?
Yeah, I certainly think so. I think the points issue has kind of come to a subsided. That's a pretty big gap. We talked about it in this and several of the other series of it's no longer about you just having a good day. You got to have one, two, or even three drivers have bad days and more than one. You're not going to make it up in one. So I think we're almost even to the point of Chris Buescher in 17 needing to win, if not him doing really good and several's having bad days. So it's getting down to crunch time of win to get in. And I think it's going to open up. I think we could see some interesting things in these five races, like I mentioned, of some varying pitch strategies or bold moves, if you will, as that desperation sets in.
Yep. Okay, I'm typing here. So I think that will pretty much do it here for tonight's Hot Topics, unless you got something real quick, Tommy or Jay.
And I think we're good.
Okay. Tommy?
Nothing really to add.
Okay, so let's go ahead and do our roundtable. Tommy, we'll start with you.
Follow me on Twitter, TommyC underscore 24 or at Cincinnati5Fan. Haven't really tweeted lately, been kind of busy, not working on anything, but give me a follow, and I'll express my opinion every now and then on some NASCAR stuff.
Okay. Jay?
Well, I don't limit my expressing my opinion to just NASCAR. I express it on a lot of different things. So you follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. And just a twist this weekend, if you're in the Jackson, Mississippi area, your Capital City Raceway going to be Monster Truck Mayhem. So if you want to see some Monster Truck action, you can come out to Jackson Motor Speedway for that this weekend.
All right. And I am Fan for Racing Site on Twitter. We are Fan for Racing blog and radio everywhere else, including our fanforracing.com website, where you can see our articles as they come out and the recap from the weekends of racing. So definitely looking forward to this weekend at New Hampshire, as well as the race at Berlin Raceway. I think that one's going to be especially exciting to watch, and I can't wait to find out who wins all these races. So I hope you'll join us back on Monday night when we'll be on at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time for our review show with Sal Segala. So with that, I guess a big thank you to all of our listeners. We truly appreciate each and every one of you for taking the time to check in with us and to hear what we have to say. We enjoy doing the show, and we hope you enjoy listening to our thoughts. So with that, thank you also to our Fan for Racing crew. Tonight I can personally thank you, Tommy, for always being on standby and available to step in when Andy or Mike's not able to make it. And Jay, you are so consistent. You're here whenever you're needed, and I do appreciate you for that. So thank you to our Fan for Racing crew. And with that, I guess we're ready to say goodnight.
All right. It's a quick note, Tommy, I don't know if you've been following. You're up. You get final Xfinity seat pick, and we're going to go with non-breaking news. Andy picked Chase Briscoe in the Cup Series.
Okay. So you're going to get your
pick.
Have
a good night. Oh, that's right. I took Brad Keselowski, so I think that puts Sam up, if I'm not mistaken, next.
Okay, guys. Good luck this weekend, and enjoy the weekend of racing. Good night, everybody.
Good night.